Today on Under the Dome, candidates have turned in their nominating petitions for the March 20th primary. Now, some of those petitions are being objected to. We talk about who might get kicked off the ballot. Plus, Democratic candidate for Governor J.B. Pritzker picked up some more high-profile endorsements last week. Is he going to run away with his party's nomination? In addition, we talk about the property tax assessment process in Chicago and how it is playing into the increasingly contentious race for Illinois governor. All this and more coming up next on this week's episode of Under the Dome.
Hello and welcome to Under the Dome, the State Government and Illinois Politics podcast produced by the State Journal Register. I'm Angie Muse, the executive editor, and I'm here with State House reporter Doug Finke and political writer Bernie Schoenberg. So let's start with politics. No surprise, some people are facing petition objections to their efforts to be a primary candidate for March 20th. Bernie, can you walk us through who's being challenged here in central Illinois?
Sure, and this is very usual, especially for candidates who are perhaps not the most well-known people or first-time candidates, or sometimes people who have run for a lot of things and aren't careful enough with the petition process, because when you've watched some of objections to petitions, even for local races over the years, as I've been able to do, lawyers get involved, it's very meticulous, there's lots of rules to follow. So there's a guy named Stephen Westerfield, who is running for state representative in the 99th House District, where Republicans have, in Sangamon County, have endorsed Mike Murphy, who used to own a restaurant, and Democrats have two candidates, Jenica Myers Hopkins and Mark Bell. Stephen Westerfield's petitions were objected to, so we will see if he remains on the ballot.
And this is for the open seat that Sarah Wojcicki-Jimenez is departing from.
He's a Republican who voted for the tax increase that the governor didn't want and then decided, and she said for reasons beyond that, that she didn't want to run for another term, so it's an open seat. In the 48th Senate District, where the incumbent is Andy Menard, there's a guy named Christopher Hicks, who's running as a Republican. There was an objection filed to his petitions. It was actually filed by Bruce Pillsbury, who is the Macon County Republican chairman, who supports Seth McMillan for the 48th Senate District. And Seth McMillan is of Taylorville and is the Christian County GOP chairman. And then Herman Senor, who's Ward 2 Alderman in Springfield, is the Republican running in the 96th House District, where Sue Scheer is the incumbent Democrat. And there was an objection filed to Herman Senor's petitions. It was actually filed by Gary Pierce, who's a Springfield minister who talked about running as a Republican for that district but did not file petitions. So just kind of an odd and weird situation. Herman Senor, for example, said he filed, I think it was about 300 more than the 500 signatures he needed to run for state rep. So given the fact that Herman Senor has Sangamon County Republicans behind him, my guess is he will survive. There is at least an initial hearing in most of these cases coming up Tuesday at the State Board of Elections. And just on the statewide scene, there's a Renato Mariotti is one of eight candidates on the Democratic side running for Attorney General now that Lisa Madigan's not running. Somebody filed an objection to his petitions. Actually, it was I think it was Scott Drury who filed objection to his petitions, and then somebody filed objection to Scott Drury's petitions also. He's running for Attorney General as well. He's a state representative from Highwood and ran for governor for a while. So, again, those are both knowledgeable political people, so I would be surprised if they didn't have the adequate signatures, but we'll see.
And will they make a determination at this hearing, or is there a deadline for when they have to decide if the person's met the threshold?
I don't remember exactly what the deadline is, but usually if there are some very clear cases like someone who filed no signatures or very few, I think the State Board of Elections, acting, you know, as the State Electoral Board, which is the same people, they might be able to make a quick determination in some cases. Usually at a first hearing like this, they assign hearing officers to these things and then set a date for some evidence to be collected or documents to be turned in. So we'll know soon enough. The primary is until March 20th, so the ballot is a long way from being set.
Okay. And in the crowded governor's race, a bit of a surprise, no one challenged any of the six Democrats who had filed, so they will, it looks like, all go forward on the ballot.
Well, I'm not sure that they all will, although some who may not be considered the top tier of candidates may. There's a guy, for example, named Terry Getz of DuPo. I believe he's a prison guard, DuPo in Southern Illinois. I was told by the the general counsel to the State Board of Elections that the fact that he filed a document saying he intends to run but no signatures, the board may have legal authority now just to remove him even without an objection. So he may be gone. But Bob Diber, who's actually, it says he's from Marine, Illinois, but he's the regional superintendent of schools in Madison County. He's long been on the campaign trail. He probably has enough signatures, but he was not objected to, so he'll be there. T.O. Hardiman, who actually won 30 counties over Pat Quinn in the Democratic primary 4 years ago. He's from Calumet City now. He'll be on. There is a guy named Robert Marshall who years ago ran for, I believe it was Senate as a Republican. He's run for other things. I saw him when he was filing for governor. He lives in Burr Ridge, and he is a doctor, and he's in his 70s. And he had a press conference actually calling for the state of Illinois to be divided into four states. And I asked him if that was still the case when I saw him. And he said, well, maybe three or maybe two. And it looks like Robert Marshall will be on the ballot because nobody challenged his petitions.
All right. And that leads us actually with the governor's race. There was some fairly significant endorsement news this past week with the two Democratic senators, Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth, coming out for J.B. Pritzker.
I think... you know, if you're a Republican and you look at that, oh, Mike Madigan is controlling all these people, the governor might say, Governor Rauner, who likes to blame everything on Mike Madigan. But clearly, Senators Durbin and Duckworth have their own statewide base of support. They didn't jump into this too early. I think this is evidence, even though the race for Democratic nomination for governor continues to be contentious, with Chris Kennedy and Daniel Biss, you know, attacking Pritzker and sometimes Mike Madigan almost as much as the Republicans do. Pritzker has opened about 15 offices across the state. There's one in Springfield. He's got people making phone calls all the time. He's been advertising a lot, obviously. He is self-funding. I actually looked at his finance reports recently. He only is taking money from himself. The only other donations that are listed are like refunds from contractors, you know, to the campaign or whatever. So it is, I've never seen an entirely self-funded campaign before. And it's different from Bruce Rauner, who will send out, his campaign will send out those emails, give us $5, you know, to help with the cause, to get Speaker Madigan
going. Right, kind of trying to get the grassroots.
Right. So Durbin and Duckworth are big catches for Pritzker, the Illinois Federation of Teachers. Over the weekend, after Durbin and Duckworth made that announcement Friday in Chicago, Illinois Federation of Teachers, you know, one of the two giant teachers unions in the state, and they include the Chicago Teachers Union, came out for Pritzker as well. So he's got a lot of union support. You know, you've got various legislators and other folks going for Biss or Kennedy, but Pritzker seems to have the bulk of, you know, the big names in the Democratic Party and the big organizations. We'll see where that goes, because obviously you don't want to look like you think you're inevitable. On the other hand, he's been building a case that he's building an infrastructure to get this done.
All right. And, you know, you mentioned that the Biss and Kennedy attacks. Your column last week was about Bill Houlihan, yeah.
Well, you know, I try to, it is usually open session
at the Sangamon
County Democratic Committee call where the precinct committeemen meet. And Bill Houlihan is a committeeman, but he's also a member of the Democratic State Central Committee. And he's also a state director for Senator Dick Durbin.
Who had at that point not yet endorsed.
That's right.
Pritzker.
This was on
this was
Wednesday. Durbin had not announced that he was for Pritzker. That came Friday. And Houlihan had not announced who he's for either, because I'm sure he, and I don't know if he has yet, but I'm guessing that he's going along with the senator on this. But he just stood up at the meeting and said, I just want to make an announcement. Daniel Biss has been putting out some emails that I've been getting that are very negative towards J.B. Pritzker in ways that I don't think are fair. And I think I've called him and left a message. I've talked to him about a previous event. I encourage other people here to do the same. Don't give Republicans ammunition to use against our candidate even during this primary process. So it's kind of interesting. You know, it was like, don't be Bernie Sanders attacking Hillary all the time, because look what that did. He didn't say it that way. But he was basically saying, one of the things that Daniel Biss had criticized J.B. Pritzker for was being at a Sierra Club event in Chicago, which I think was a candidates forum, and then taking a chartered flight to a town in southern Illinois where the NAACP had its state convention. Pritzker's ideas. I would, you know, I wanted to be at both places. Biss was like, well, how can you say you're for the environment and then take a chartered jet and not everybody can do this? So you've got that kind of, you know, attacking the rich guy. And it is true that some of the things Biss have said have been picked up by the Rauner campaign and reemphasized, you know, about where, what's your favorite offshore account or whatever, where you have your money, which the governor was on and the Republican Party was on and the governor's campaign. So that just kind of shows that the Democrats are worried about what is sometimes a contentious, you know, infighting that they hope won't carry over until next fall.
Okay. Well, Doug, meanwhile, amid all the politicking, there has been some governing going on. The state is still trying to do a pretty massive Medicaid revamp by January 1st.
That's correct. And the General Assembly is continuing to, at least the Democrats are continuing to review that process. The idea is that the state is trying to move a lot more people who are Medicaid recipients into managed care programs because they say that's going to save $1 billion over a four-year period. The Democrats have called a series of hearings. Both the House and Senate committees have called some hearings to look into, the way these contracts were awarded because they think the whole process was shrouded in secrecy, and B, just some concrete evidence that these contracts will, in fact, save the money that the administration says it is. The curious thing, or the one of the interesting developments that came out of the first round of hearings on this, there's a separate consulting contract that was awarded to a company named McKinsey. It was a no-bid contract. The state's chief procurement officer reviewed the contracts and said, no, this does not fit the criteria for a no-bid contract. It should have been bid out, and consequently voided this contract that was worth nearly $13 million. After that happened, the governor was asked about it, Governor Rauner, and he fired back that the procurement officer, the state's chief procurement officer, was just a Madigan lackey doing his bidding and dismissed it all as politics. Well, that set off Representative David McSweeney, a Republican from the suburbs who is not exactly a Rauner fan. And he, at one of these hearings, said the governor has to either back up what he said, that this contract was canceled for political reasons, or he owes this procurement officer an apology, because basically what he said was a fairly serious charge, that there was no basis for canceling this contract other than just raw politics. So far, there's been, no evidence offered that it was a politically motivated deal, or B, neither has the governor apologized to the procurement officer.
And for the record,
and then more emerged about the procurement officer and how she was appointed, too.
She was recommended for the job by the Rauner administration, no less. She appears eminently qualified to do the job. I mean, this is to ensure that the state in its process of buying goods and services follows the rules and the laws. And she has the background to do this. And, you know, a number of people were saying that this was ultimately a cheap shot by the governor.
Her name is Ellen Daly. She's not related to the Dalys of mayoral fame in Chicago, but she does report in her position, I believe it's to the Executive Ethics Commission, so she's not part of the Rauner administration per se. She reports to an independent body.
Right, but nonetheless, the administration recommended.
Right, there was a letter from his previous one of his previous chief
legal counsel. Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we can expect probably more hearings in the next week or so on this Medicaid contract issue.
I believe the Democrats intend to draw this out as long as they possibly can. So they've got some additional hearings scheduled for this week.
And then back on politics, you know, we talked about the governor and the speaker, and now it's kind of getting more tangled with the governor, the speaker, Joe Berrios, the Cook County assessor, and then Pritzker into it. I think we're going to be hearing, it's a safe bet, a lot about how different people have used tax assessments or tax breaks on their properties.
I think we are. The Chicago Tribune has done a couple of big stories about the assessment process in Chicago that is carried on by Joe Berrios, the Cook County assessor. He also happens to be chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party. So when giant buildings downtown Chicago get assessments lowered, they often use law firms. And the most often used law firm is the one of Mike Madigan. And one person who benefited from a lowered assessment on a property downtown, and this was actually a mansion next to the one he lives in, was J.B. Pritzker, who got a big tax break the stories that came out were that, you know, toilets were disconnected. He said the house was unlivable and he got a significant tax break. We are going to hear a lot about this. So Governor Rauner went to Wheeling this past week for one of his days where his official schedule said nothing was going on, but it was a campaign event. And he had, so that makes sense, it wasn't a government thing. He went to a home in Wheeling, talked about how Joe Berrios and Mike Madigan and J.B. Pritzker, who the governor talks about a lot now, are the unholy trinity of collusion, corruption, conflicts of interest dealing with property taxes. There was another story on a TV channel in Chicago, I believe CBS, a couple days later, that a condo that the governor owns in a building downtown, that the assessment was lowered on that building as well, but not by the same process, by the Board of Review. So there is a question of if that's reasonable to talk about in the same breath, but property taxes are going to be a big issue. The governor continues to say Madigan is corrupt at every turn, which is what he's been done for 3 years, at times when you would think he would want to work with the speaker to like get a budget done, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be smooth for the next year.
The curious thing about that example in Wheeling was that the assessment on the house actually went down, according to news reports, but the tax bill went up. Well, that's the complication of the property tax process. Berrios sets the assessments. He doesn't set the taxes that are collected on
that. Right, because local government set those. And the governor had also appointed, like, the woman who lives at that house to some state board. I think it's unpaid, but that raised some eyebrows as well.
Position.
You know, you appoint someone to – and I think it's the board that decides if new hospitals can be built or something. So everything is interconnected in odd ways, and there will be lots of spin, and it's going to be a very long campaign, but at least we're within a year now.
Right. And, you know, the property tax issue is a big one in Illinois because it's a relatively high property tax state and, you know, a source of concern for voters. But as you guys noted, it's a complicated process, but that, I think, won't stop people from trying to turn it into a soundbite one.
Yeah.
Doug, absolutely. What do you think the prospects are for any legislative action when they come back in session on this?
On property taxes?
Yeah.
There has been talk about doing some kind of a freeze at various times, and it's never gotten – the governor wants this. It's not gotten traction in the House. I believe the Senate did pass a plan that provided for a two-year freeze. The problem that lawmakers have, regardless of political persuasion, is when you choke off property taxes, you're choking off local governments from their source of revenue. So this is not something that you want to do willy-nilly. I mean, you have, if you want to take some action to freeze property taxes, you have to do it in a way that it's not going to starve schools and cities and what have you. So that has been a problem. Trying to strike that balance has been a problem. I'm sure it's something that there are people who would like to do that in an election year and be able to go home and say, look what we did for you. But I'm not going to lay odds on them being successful at it at this point.
Yeah, there's a lot of spin involved in this, too, because I believe the House has passed some property tax freeze measures. But if I get it right here, they haven't always included something the governor usually wants, which is, less mandates on local governments so that they can actually save money. But what that means to him is he's trying to kind of take away the power of local unions, allow less collective bargaining on less issues at the local level, which is part of
his
turnaround agenda.
Right, because it's
agenda,
his contention that will allow local governments to save money
and spend less. So others who have been involved in this issue, by the way, just in like calling for Joe Berrios to resign, Jeannie Ives, who is the governor isn't talking about her much and has avoided questions as to if he'll debate her, but she's the state representative from Wheaton running against him in the Republican primary. And then Chris Kennedy has been very critical of Speaker Madigan and Joe Berrios and talked about, you know, corruption almost in the tax system, pretty much as much as Governor Rauner has.
Right. So. And, you know, Pritzker is taking heat from his rivals for not calling on Berrios to resign.
Right. And his view is, you know, it's up to the voters to decide. And Berrios is up for election next year. And there's a guy named Fritz Kagi who's running against him, who's another Democrat, I believe. So he could end up, you know, in a battle. And Pritzker's view is, or statement was, it's not my job to, you know, fight Democrats. Let the voters decide.
Right. So, well, and we're heading into the holidays, so maybe things will get a little quieter for the next couple of weeks. Not necessarily can bet on it, but, you know, it's a traditionally more slow time of the year for the general, for the state government and politics scene this year. I don't know. Maybe.
It's a time to show brotherhood to men and... We'll see if that carries over to Illinois politics.
I'll watch the TV for, you know, paid advertisements in this season. We'll see if perhaps we can avoid
them.
But come January, and especially with that March 20th primary quick approaching, it's going to get pretty intense pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, with that said, the Under the Dome will be taking a holiday break. So we will be back in January to catch you up on anything that did happen while we were off exuding peace and goodwill ourselves. Thanks for listening. As always, you can find the podcast on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher. This has been Under the Dome.